Welcome to the Global Discussion, discussions with creatives, leaders, and thinkers. My name is Simon Hodgkins. It's a real pleasure today to be joined by Andrew Harley. Andrew, you're very welcome to the show. Let's begin by asking you maybe to introduce yourself and tell a little bit about what you do to our international audience. Over to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Simon. I'm a psychologist by background. My early career was in human resources. I've specialised probably throughout my career, narrowed the focus from general human resources down through to looking at what it is that drives performance in a business environment, and more particularly, what differentiates effective leaders from people who are just managing. So my journey has been one of working in the commercial world, from the pharmaceutical sector through to confectionery, through to distribution, and then moved into consultancy around about 1990 and specialised there in assessment, either for external hiring or for development. And that's really been a focus for the last 30 years or so.
That's a long time to be running your own show. And I think you must have experienced an awful lot of clients and an awful lot of projects over that time. You mentioned leadership, and I want to jump straight into that because I know it's a particular topic of interest and a particular insights that you have here. Do you think leaders today are different from leaders maybe 5-10 years ago? Has the world changed on significantly? Or to put it another way, what do you advise people when it comes to great leadership these days?
I think leadership is driven by circumstance and by situation. I don't think there is such a thing as this is a model of leadership, this a one size fits all approach. That doesn't work. There are some key aspects that differentiate leadership, and it's leadership, in essence, is about getting other people to do things. It's about giving people a sense of purpose, giving them a sense of direction. And the really good leaders are the ones who surround themselves with people who are better than they are. And that is an inherent problem for a number of individuals who get into leadership positions, because they tend to surround themselves with people who are less good than they are to remove any potential threats. So it's. I think one of the challenges is that I think leadership is changing in the way that work is changing. So if we think about work historically, and I'm old enough to remember a time when, you know, you went to school, that gave you a routine, it gave you a discipline, that helped you transition into the world of work, be that into an apprenticeship, into indentures in the profession, be that into higher education and then into work. And it, from childhood, it gives you a desire for order and structure. So work, to a large extent, for the majority of people, is something which gives purpose and structure to their lives. What's been fascinating in the last 3 years is with COVID, it's precipitated a change for a number of organizations that shifted them from having everybody attend work to work being now distributed. So you get the concept of hybrid working. The fascinating thing is that management and leadership haven't caught up with the idea that it's different managing people when they aren't present to when they are present. And I see lots of dysfunction coming in where there is a lack of acknowledgement of the change in the way that we engage with other people. If we're doing it through the medium of Zoom or Teams, as opposed to talking to them over a cup of coffee or standing next to the water cooler.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
And the influence is also the way that people are, if you take it back, the way people are hired. I mean, people are hired against a set of criteria and attributes that have been shown to work in a traditional working environment. That's not the same set of attributes and characteristics that make somebody effective working remotely or in a hybrid working environment. If you say to people you can work from home, you take away a lot of the structure that is there in a factory or an office.
Yeah, and I think when you mention that, it's something I hadn't actually considered, because obviously the world of working has changed, and post-pandemic, if that's the thing we're in now, a lot of companies and have let people work from home. A lot of people now may even work from home on a full-time basis. They may not even go into an office anymore. Yeah. Some people have very, very much adopted a hybrid model, I know. But I suppose the job description that you mentioned, I do see a lot of companies, even today, that have probably been hiring the same type of job on the same type of job description that they were pre-pandemic, hadn't even really considered that. And I suppose it's moving from this time and attendance type of approach to measuring projects and outcomes, maybe, or a very different way, when that sort of physical structure, that entity, that sort of being there, doing the commute, it's no longer there for a lot of people, is it?
No, I mean, the absence of the commute for a lot of people is a real bonus. But at the same time, you've got an expectation with people who are in the workforce or are coming into the workforce that they can demand hybrid working. I was talking recently to my accountant, who was tearing the hair out and saying it's increasingly difficult to get qualified accountants to recruit and hire them, mainly because most of them come with a set of requirements around how they want the work to be organized for them. So there's a sort of shift of influence from it being exclusively I'm an employer, I will offer you a role, to now some employers are having to negotiate with the people that they want to find an accommodation between the two. And going back to the issue of either attending or not attending, if you take people into a hybrid environment where they are distant from where they work, you lose a lot of the informal contact that we sometimes don't even acknowledge exists, but happens. The fact that you go to a meeting and the meeting is formally organized, people follow an agenda. What happens when you step out of the door of that meeting room is you don't switch off all the other people that have been there. You talk to them, you talk about things that are relevant to what was happening in the meeting, and sometimes have more impact than what was transacted in the meeting. When you shift that into a virtual environment, you end a Zoom meeting and you have no contact with the other people who've been there. It's gone. And then the next one starts. So you lose two things. One, you lose the informal contact, you lose that opportunity to have a relaxed discussion with somebody, which is free form, to one where one meeting ends and then within 60 to 90 seconds you're back on Zoom into the next meeting. So you lose the sort of decompression between the activities.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I speak to a lot of people who have experienced both sides. You know, they were working pre and post pandemic, and during the pandemic, of course, when most of us were locked down anyway. But I suppose the feedback that I get a lot is that they're working harder, more hours, and their productivity is up. I'm not sure all of that is a good thing, but It is surprising because I think even before we sort of got into this mode of working, there might have been a lot of skepticism from certain employers to say, well, you can't work like this. And then we kind of had to work like it. And we sort of almost proved the model that, no, actually, you can work like this quite successfully in some cases, not in all. But I just think that's a very interesting dynamic. And it brings me onto something that I really do want to ask you, Andrew. And that's around strategic thinking in today's modern world, because a lot of the times people seem to be increasingly busy. We're bombarded with new tools, and whether it's AI or the latest social media platform or more instructions from head office coming in, or just day-to-day stuff seems to be getting so busy for so many people. And I'm wondering, you know, if you're on a leadership team or if you're the MD or the CEO of an organization, how do you go about that strategic thinking now, where it's not operational, it's not busy, 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 but it's the stuff that really moves a business forward? Are you approaching or teaching or explaining strategic thinking to businesses maybe a little bit different in this new world? Or is it a fundamental that's always going to hold true and you just have to find time for it?
Well, we've got half an hour, haven't we?
Well, look, I know for our audience watching or listening, yeah, I know you could talk for weeks on end on this topic, and you've got a lot of insights. And I definitely want to put the importance of strategic thinking and also maybe some of the nuances of how to go about it on the question table for you, Andrew, because I know it's a really good area that you can speak to.
I'd make a differentiation, first of all. I think there are people who are visionary thinkers, and then there are people who bring a strategic perspective to a business. And you know, the visionary thinkers are the ones who change the way that a certain sector operates. So you can look at, you know, I remember in the early days of computing, there was a publishing house called Dorling and Kindersley that did wonderful illustrated books. And the leader of that business had a moment when he realized that they weren't in the business of putting ink on paper. They were in the business of assembling and disseminating information. So it shifted them from one model of what they did to using the core skills that they had in a different and more productive and ultimately more profitable way. So those are rare. They are extremely rare. Those who make a strategic contribution in organizations are the ones who can take the stakeholder expectations in that organization, be that a public sector organization, be it delivering healthcare, be it delivering housing, be it delivering rail travel, be it manufacturing pencils. The people who are bringing the strategic contributions to those businesses, the ones who understand what the stakeholders of that business are expecting in the future, and are able to translate that into a picture of where we as an organization need to be a year from now, 2 years from now, at a stretch, 3 years from now. And then it's a matter of how they then communicate that inside the organization so that they transfer their picture of the short-term future and what that means in terms of change to the people who are actually going to have to implement and deliver it. So strategic thinking is really about understanding what the future state needs to look like, but not 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, but in terms of 1, 3, probably 5 years from now. And led against on that is the fact that the world is changing now at such a rapid rate that to say this is what it's going to be like in 5 years' time is really moving into crystal ball territory.
No, I think it's a perfect observation, because I remember speaking to one chief executive of a very large organization. I won't mention which one. And I asked him, how do you go about planning? Not on this show, just in a personal capacity. And he said, well, I figure out what we did last year and I just write it down, because it's moving that quickly. You know, it's just a blur,
yeah.
Which made me chuckle. What about advice for people running businesses today, looking to scale their businesses now? I know it's a broad question, but is there sort of some real concrete principles or some real areas of advice we could maybe share today that would help our international audience watching this? You know, they're creatives, they're leaders, they're thinkers in their own rights. Any sort of advice if you're looking to scale a business today, to grow it profitably, to expand your revenues and your bottom line?
I think this sounds a little trite, but it's about making sure that you invest the time in bringing everybody in the organization with you. If I revert back to talking about, you know, creating a picture of what the organization is going to look like in 12 months, 24 months, 36 months from now, the people that I have worked with who are highly effective in that regard are the ones who, first of all, acknowledge that they're not going to do it themselves. They spend time in making sure that the people who have real responsibility for making things happen share that same picture of the future. And they encourage them to work out how they are going to get there. So it's about, the leadership of the growth comes from being able to set a destination and then get the people in the organization to determine how you arrive at that destination. So in the majority of cases, the people who are there are the people who are most able to do it.
Yeah, I get that. And I suppose it comes back to something you were saying earlier, doesn't it? That, you know, not being afraid as a leader to hire the person who's better at a particular task than you are, because it's that collaborative, almost flywheel effect of having the right talent to be able to help drive, isn't it? As opposed to not hiring anybody who might be slightly better than you, you know? And yeah. I think that's a real important piece. What about your own planning when you're working with a customer or a client, or maybe at the time of recording, you know, we've got a whole new year ahead. How do you think about the next 6 months, 12 months? Are you still meticulously planning? Are you just taking each day as it comes? What's the approach? What's on your roadmap? What are you thinking about as you think about the year ahead, Andrew?
Well, I guess I'm at a stage in my career now where I'm thinking about not tapering off, but only doing things that I'm really interested in doing. So looking forward, what really I want to get involved in and engage with going forward is looking at how the shape of work is creating new demands on people who lead and manage. And the challenge is to try and create models of operation that will allow people to adapt and adjust to be more effective in a changing world than they have been in the past. And against that, the other thing that I'm fascinated by is the challenge of decision making. And as you alluded to earlier, there is so much information now that we're bombarded with, the capacity to choose is becoming very critical for individuals. So, you know, how do I choose? It's one of the things I'm struggling with. How do I choose a new car? You know, do I stick with fossil fuel because it's tried and tested? Do I go for a hybrid? I'm not sure that that's as economic as it could be. Do I go for a fully electric vehicle? But then I have this range anxiety problem, which is I know that if I want to go for a long drive or drive a long distance, it's going to mean that I have to find charging points, have a bit of the right charging points. So I use that as an example of the complexity of the environment that we are in and how it places a demand on the individual, which is a significant demand in terms of making prudent decisions. And there's another bit of that as well, which I think we're moving into a second dark age, which is with the advent of technology. People do not understand how the technology works, but there are masters of technology who can come and fix your mobile phone or fix your computer. I'm beginning to view them as sort of latter-day witch doctors. They have an understanding and the capacity to deal with the technology that we rely on, which far exceeds anything that mere mortals can achieve.
Yeah, and I suppose if you layer on machines talking to machines and AI feeding AI, it becomes even more complicated. But I think you've made two really astute observations there, or comments there, which is, you know, this whole leadership in the new world, for want of a better phrase, and the complexities of that, but also, you know, this important choosing and making decisions when we are, as you say, bombarded by all these different messages, so many choices, and it does put an extra layer, an extra burden almost on the leader, because there are so many angles or things to try and think through, and then so many options. Yeah. So I think, you know, that you certainly don't pick easy topics to focus on for the year ahead, Andrew, that's for sure. And when you figure it out, do come back and let us know everything we need to be doing. The last thing I want to ask you, or the two things I want to squeeze in before we do finish up here, is I want to ask you, is there anything we haven't touched on? And maybe it is something we've already touched on that you'd like to double down on, that you'd like to share and leave us with today. And secondly, and importantly, if people want to reach out and connect with you or find out a little bit more about what you're doing in this space, where's the best place to point people to?
Well, deal with the second part first, which is I'm virtually invisible in the virtual world. So the easiest thing is to just look for my LinkedIn profile and work through that. I think the thing that I would kind of go back to and double down on is this question about how we make decisions. Because there's part of me that misses the development in younger people of critical thinking. There seems to be a lack of enthusiasm for examining evidence. So it's easy for a lot of people just to go with whatever an influencer might promote without actually looking behind it and saying, but what does it mean? But it's probably that's part of my scientific training, which is just I'm driven by curiosity.
Yeah, and I think it's a very important point, though, because it touches on everything, doesn't it? We've been through a period, whether you look at the political landscape or other areas of life and business, where it's been hard to know what the facts are. It's been hard to know what the truth is. There's a lot of skepticism out there, and I think you're right. There's a lot of people that now just surface skim. It's just there is no critical thinking going on. It's just whichever way the wind blows. And there's good and bad to each sides of that coin, I suppose. But it is a really fascinating topic, and the way that you see things developing in this area. And when you talk about actually critical thinking, or getting down to the essence of the facts and understanding something to the right level that it needs to be understood to formulate that clear strategic direction or the right decision. Yeah, maybe we're losing a little bit of that, Andrew. Yeah, maybe that's a really hot area that we need to really think about. How do we grasp that back in an area where, as you're saying, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors or technical wizardry going on, when actually what we need to do is maybe pause and think a little bit more, you know? It's been fascinating to catch up with you today, Andrew. I've really enjoyed our discussion here. It brings me nicely to the end of this episode of the Global Discussion. And I do want to say before we wrap up, it is so refreshing to hear somebody say, just for once, I'm almost invisible in this digital world. It's very hard to find me. Nobody really says that today. And it's so refreshing to hear that. You know, if you want to find me, just go and have a little look, dig a little bit deeper, you'll find me somewhere. But it does bring us nicely to the end. Thanks to everybody who's been watching or listening to Andrew and I talking through these topics today. Make sure that you like, follow, subscribe, do everything I need you to do to help support this show. And of course, if you can find him, he's a little bit like the A-team. If you can find him on LinkedIn, reach out and get in touch. Thanks so much. Make sure that you come back and listen to some more episodes with creatives and leaders and thinkers just like Andrew. Andrew, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you again today.
Thank you, Simon.